This is the Conversations with Eastside podcast. Eastside Church is an eclectic community of worshipers on the east side of Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Ed. I'm a member here at Eastside. And today it's just me. I don't have anyone else on the episode. It will be a mini episode, a devotional about drawing near to Christ. Okay, so for today's mini-sode, it's going to be a devotional that comes from Luke chapter 15, and we'll actually start at the very end of chapter 14, and then just the first couple verses of chapter 15. Reading from the New Revised Standard Version, if you read starting from Luke 14, verses 34 and 35, "Salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. They throw it away. Let anyone with ears to hear, listen." Let anyone with ears to hear, listen. Chapter 15 starts, "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, 'This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" So that's where we'll start. And, you know, this is just one of these small devotionals that we're going to put out as kind of a material for discussion. I think when you look at Luke 14, that very end of it, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen." And you'd have to go back earlier throughout Luke 14. But, you know, Jesus is talking about, you know, the great feast. And then, you know, that all the guests had ignored the invitation of the you know, the king who had invited all these people, and they made all these excuses. And so the master of that feast invited people off the streets and brought them in. And then it gets to this passage that's called "The Cost of Discipleship," verses 25 through 33, which basically says, "Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple." The rest of the passage is really about what it means to totally surrender to following Jesus. And then salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. They throw it away. Would let anyone with ears to hear listen. And that last phrase, "let anyone with ears to hear listen," is something that Jesus says, uniquely Jesus says. I don't know that was a saying that was just common at the time. But there's this idea that if you can hear this, then you should listen to these words. And then the very next verse in chapter 15 says, "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him." That's not just a coincidental kind of transition. That's a really clever literary device, I think, which is, you know, let anyone with ears to hear listen. Now the tax collectors and sinners are coming near to listen. They were the ones with ears to hear. And Jesus really, I mean, this is kind of the gospel message, if you will. Jesus is a good shepherd, lays down everything, but then calls us to surrender everything also. Jesus welcomes everyone who can hear this message. This is central in our theology, where we believe about prevenient grace, this idea that Jesus is inviting and welcoming everybody. Anyone with ears to hear, anyone that can hear this message and respond to it, will listen to it and will draw near. The Pharisees and the scribes, however, in verse 2, they're grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." And we're going to deconstruct that a little bit. But basically, we've got people who are coming near to listen, and we have people who are grumbling. And Jesus kind of welcomes everybody. Jesus kind of welcomes us into relationships, not based on merit or piety, but on the basis of whoever hears and responds to that call. So, let's look at the responses of the two kind of groups of people in this passage. The first, again, are the sinners and tax collectors who were coming near to listen to Jesus. And then there are the Pharisees and scribes who must have also been in proximity, because it's not like they were, they couldn't see what was going on. They were observing it. And then they were grumbling and they were saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So you've got people coming near, and then you've got people grumbling. Let's unpack that a little bit. Let's look at these sinners and tax collectors drawing near. You know, when you read the whole Bible, you see that, yeah, this takes some level of courage for these people who are sort of outcasts in society to step forward and draw near to this rabbi that they weren't supposed to have access to. But we've seen this all over scripture. Like so many times we've seen, it's a natural response. And that's something for us to consider also. When you hear and listen to the call of Christ to surrender for love of God and love of neighbor, that beckon to exchange your heavy yoke for Jesus' light one, this becomes a no-brainer. It's the same call that causes scandalous women to leave their water jars by the well. It's the call that makes a veteran fisherman who totally understands how stormy the water can be to jump out of a boat and walk to Jesus on stormy water. It's the same call that makes a woman crack open an alabaster jar without a second thought. This is the effect of the gospel. And it's something that we should view in our own hearts. You know, have we heard that call, and have we listened and drawn near and had this essentially automatic response to hear and to listen and to draw near? And so that's one takeaway, is just let's look at these quote-unquote sinners and tax collectors, despite, you know, some of the social mores and the cultural barriers that would prevent them from doing that. This is a natural response because Jesus is saying something, and for anyone who has ears to hear, they're the ones that are listening, and they're drawing near to Christ. You know, when we look at the second category of people, it's the Pharisees. And what do? They grumble. They're grumbling, and they're saying, this fellow welcomes sinners. How can they grumble? Okay, well, let's get into it. Pharisee actually means literally separation. And their identity is actually wrapped up in a value system that promotes separation. They view the sinners and tax collectors not as people who are responding to this welcome, this radical love that Jesus is asking or offering, but they view them instead as their identity as sinners and tax collectors, right? And sinners and tax collectors, let's look at that even just for a second. Sinners meaning, you know, they're ceremonially unclean, according to the books of law, and they have no place intermingling with those people who are clean. And tax collectors are even worse, because they're that, plus they're traitors to the Jewish nation, right? Tax collectors are these people that essentially were kind of turncoats, Jewish people living among Jewish people, among the Jewish community, and they were employed by the Romans to collect taxes, for Caesar. And there wasn't like a nice schedule or like TurboTax where you could punch in numbers and get their income, and it was all like fairly mathematical. These guys made money by essentially on commission. If they could milk a little extra out on behalf of the Roman Empire, then they could get paid a little bit more. And it was more or less extortion, because they had the might of the Roman military, the occupying force, you know, on their back. So these are people who are essentially selling out a conquered people to the conquerors in exchange for really a lot of money. And so, you know, Pharisees, who are, you know, these upstanding Jewish leaders and people of the Jewish nation, and pillars of that community, they would have viewed tax collectors as traitors. So that they looked at sinners as people who are unclean, and tax collectors as traitors. And, you know, in order to cast that kind of judgment on people, you actually need to be separated. That separation that the Pharisees had from them, you know, it enabled their judgment, not just because of longstanding social norms, because that's actually how it always works. Judgment requires separation. That's how it works. When you really get to know people super well, it becomes much more difficult to judge them. Thus the saying, don't judge a book by its cover. And it leads them to possibly the most fatal crime. They judge Jesus by who he associates with, right? Because that's in step with their worldview. But it should have been the other way around. They should have seen these sinners and tax collectors as people welcomed and beloved by Jesus, right? They judge Jesus by who he associates with, instead of judging these tax collectors and sinners by who they associate with, right? The Messiah, the Son of God, the Jesus himself, the radical rabbi in their midst. And so there's a fancy word they call, you know, imputing, imputed righteousness or imputed sin. And there's this idea that they, as they view Jesus, they're imputing what they view as sinners' unrighteousness onto Jesus, instead of imputing Jesus's righteousness onto the sinners. And how backwards is that? We know this now as people, as Christians who follow in the way of Christ. We know that that's backwards. They got it wrong. You know, I'm going to share a weird anecdote. Total apologies for anyone who's like a huge fan of some of the people, some of the celebrities I'm about to mention. But it's the best one I can think of. There's this actress, Jessica Biel, and she's cool and she's everything. And some people are big fans of hers. I was actually never that big of a fan of hers. I kind of thought that she was fine. And she like dated Derek Jeter and she's an okay actress. I just never thought much of her. I thought she was sort of like a good looking person that didn't have a lot of acting chops and as a result, I started judging her because I'm separated from Jessica Biel because it turns out I don't run in Hollywood circles. So I was thinking like, oh, you know, I don't know what kind of person she is, but she, you know, judging by her public persona, there's not much I can find there. Vacuous or whatever the right word is. And then the craziest thing happened. Justin Timberlake started dating her and they got together and they have kids together and I think are married and all that. So now here's the thing. I love Justin Timberlake. I think he's awesome. I think he's super talented. I think he's a great entertainer. You know, I don't know if he's like a really solid gold heart or anything like that, but he seems like a really nice guy, very witty, very clever, really comic, likes to broaden his horizons, you know, and shared a stage with Jay-Z, you know, 10 years after NSYNC, which is more than you can say about everyone else in NSYNC. And so I've got this like great image of Justin Timberlake just because I think he's cool. And when Justin Timberlake got with Jessica Biel, what I didn't do was say to myself, Justin Timberlake is no good. That guy has bad taste. She's not that great. Like, I don't know what's going on here. But what I ended up doing, I swear to you, this is what I did. I thought better of Jessica Biel. I actually thought she was like this, oh, there's no way that she's not this person of profound depth and some kind of interesting thing that's happening that, you know, in the privacy of their relationship, that's where she just is this incredibly rich personality because Justin Timberlake's got all these great dimensions and his public persona is so rich and interesting and varied that there's no way a person like him would end up choosing, you know, someone that's not equally interesting and someone who's not equally, you know, fascinating and valuable. And so I literally to this day think better of Jessica Biel because Justin Timberlake is with her. Long story, but that's how it goes. That's how imputing should work. The person of value should impute that value to the person whose judgment you might think is dubious in your head. But in this instance, the Pharisees got it backwards, right? And ultimately, incredibly, these astute religious people are staring right at Jesus, right? Jesus the Christ, Jesus the Messiah. They're exposed to every word he's saying, but they just haven't heard. They may look like interesting people, holy people, upstanding citizens that might even be trying to make sense out of Jesus, but they never figure it out. That message never penetrates their hearts because their grip on their worldview and identity is too tight, and it blinds them from perceiving what is otherwise obvious. And so the question for us is, in what ways do we look more like Pharisees, wrapped up in our clever systems of belief and separated from where the world really lives and where Jesus really lives, and totally blind to the disruptive and continuing call of Christ to be radically welcoming, radically loving. I'll close out with this quote from Bono. Of course, because what better way to close a little devotional than a quote by Bono? He said this, and I think like in my earlier sort of impressionistic days where I was really into people's quotes, I like threw it up on my Facebook profile. And this is what he said. He said, God is in the slums, in the cardboard boxes where the poor play house. God is in the silence of a mother who has infected her child with a virus that will end both of their lives. God is in the cries heard under the rubble of war. God is in the debris of wasted opportunity and lives. And God is with us if we are with them. When we want to draw near, when we want to come near to Christ, to draw near to listen to him, he is found among the marginalized, loving, the sinners and the tax collectors and the broken people of the world. And so a lesson for us here is not just how might we look like Jesus and how might we look like the Pharisees, but if we are to look like people who are drawing near to Jesus, where can he be found? And what we see here is that this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. This fellow welcomes the outcast, the people who are judged, the people who are marginalized, and he eats with them. And so where are we found? Are we found grumbling, putting constraints on, well, you know, like I can judge and this and that, and yeah, I'm a Christian, but, you know, like we can't be doormats, or, you know, that's going too far, and people should get what they deserve, but, you know, they're always welcome at my church, but, you know, there's all these constraints and grumbling, and someone who goes out of their way overboard in an extreme expression of love, we might be like, well, that's a little crazy. That could be risky. That could be dangerous. Do we find ourselves grumbling, or do we find ourselves drawing near, coming near to listen to Christ? Because if we want to do that, we must be found where Christ is found. And this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.